Welcome back once again to LI in the AM. Frank McKay here, subbing for Jay Oliver. And our next guest is the author of a scary sounding book, but I mean, it's necessary to talk about these things at this time. And I don't have to tell anyone that we have way too many mass shootings going on in the world and certainly in our country. And Dr. Gary Jackson is the author of the book, Surviving Mass Victims Attacks, What to Do When the Unthinkable Happens. For folks, I'm thrilled to have him. Dr. Jackson, how are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm sure all the mass victim attacks that we've had and the random shootings that we've had is what fueled the idea of putting this book together. And it is it's a great idea. I mean, what to do? I mean, it's like you said, it's unthinkable, but they do happen. And unfortunately, they're happening more often.
Yeah, I have a long career in dealing with threat, probably 40 years now, across a wide range of things, including terrorism, et cetera. And because I've focused on threat, I did want to do something different with this book, since I've focused in this area. And that is, most sources look at listing the kinds of attacks that have occurred in the past. I had to go look at all of those, but my focus was on how people actually survive, to develop strategies to help people survive if they ever get caught in an attack, and covering two other areas. One, can they be prevented? And two, what if you survive and you suffer from PTSD and other kind of stress effects? And we've had them for a very long time. You're right. It appears that they're occurring more often. We've had them for probably 100 years now.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that people don't realize, I guess, because of the mass media and they love the sensationalism. And let me preface that by saying I'm sure they don't love people dying, but boy, they sure show it in a funny way, because they make stars out of some of these people. And I think we're getting a little better with that, or the media is getting a little better with that. But, if it bleeds, it leads. Unfortunately, you can't turn on the news without hearing about, serious violence. Do you think the mass media and the mainstream media has led to more of this happening, or is that just we're just seeing it because it's there?
It's a very good question. I think the correct answer is probably a little of both. I think most people are shocked when they find out that as late or as far back as 1927, there was a major attack against a school, killing 38 children with a bomb, as well as the attacker killing himself. Now, we didn't have internet. We didn't have social media, and few people have even heard of that. So as technology has improved and we have more widespread media, as well as social media, coverage is instantaneous, even at the time of the attack. And so people tune in and they'll see images, let's say, for example, of a school under siege when it's happening. And so it's immediate, and two things happen. Unfortunately, we have a number of attackers who seek recognition and attention, and that just really gets them excited. And they want to have name and recognition also. So we also have the copycats. They see that, they plan their attack, and we have very different types of attacks and attackers. So it kind of depends on the person. They're all individual cases. No two are alike.
Yeah, it's disturbing, but again, these things are happening, and we know they're happening, and unfortunately, happening in schools. It's just a disturbing trend. But again, like you said, they've been happening for 100 years.
Yeah.
Surviving mass victim attacks: What to Do When the Unthinkable Happens is the name of the book. If you're just joining us, or if you're just tuning in or turning your radio on a little late, Dr. Gary Jackson is our very special guest. Frank McKay here with Dr. Jackson. Let me go back to Columbine, because I think that's one of those pivot points in an unfortunate history that
yes.
That we look at. And, you know, I mean, is that in my mind because of because it was kind of isolated at that time? You didn't have the you didn't have a lot of them happening just prior to that. Or is it because of the Michael Moore movie? Is it because of the attention it got, you know, from alternative medias? What, why does Columbine stick out in our mind as some pivot point in history?
I think partially because it was such a horrific attack. The two attackers started shooting before they even went in the school. They went in the school, and to get into the details are disturbing because police did arrive, but it took an hour before anybody went inside the school to intervene. In the meantime, they were shooting classmates, and they ended up killing 13. And SWAT finally went in, and when they went in, that's when the incident stopped and they committed suicide. I think it was so horrific because we just weren't used to that many school attacks at the time. And it had been a long time, you know, since we had seen a school attack. Of course, now we see them all the time. And they're horrific. I mean, you know, if you look at the Sandy Hook shooting with, you know, the children, 5 and 6 year olds being killed, it's hard to even imagine that someone can do that. And so when I went back and looked at these situations, I'll tell you the most surprising thing I found is that almost in every case, there were warning signs before the incident that could have been reported, and intervention probably could have happened. So I came away with this, having found many strategies, by the way, that I present in the book, yeah. But also with the view that we're not reporting. There's a great reluctance to report on a family member, a neighbor, someone you know, because you don't want to be known as reporting. You don't want the retribution. And so these things don't get reported. Hence, the attack occurs. And then that loved one may either commit suicide, be killed, or be in prison for the rest of his life. And I say his because they're usually male.
Right. Not, you know, I mean, 99% of the time, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's highly male populated, that insane world that we're
yes.
dealing with.
Yes. And, you know, Frank, it's also interesting in that you have to kind of look at the attacks in terms of who the attackers were. You know, I go into the five types of attackers. There's true international terrorist attacks, and we had 9/11. That was a true international terrorist attack. That's our biggest one in history. We had almost 3,000 people killed. That was a mass attack. We have domestic terrorists, the Oklahoma City bombing.
Timothy McVeigh.
Yes, and that was, you know, 168 people killed, damage of buildings for 13 blocks. We've had self-radicalized terrorists. So a person, here's a U.S. citizen who decides he wants to become part of ISIS, whether he's invited or not, thinks he is, and kills in the name of ISIS or Al-Qaeda, such as the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando that went on for 3 hours, by the way. And then we have the...
I mean, that's unthinkable. I mean, it went on for three hours. Unthinkable, like your book said. I mean,
While he's shooting, he's on the phone with his wife. He's on the phone with police talking about it, holding hostages, and even walking back and forth, shooting the same victims multiple times just to make sure they were dead. And then we have the mentally ill. I mean, true mentally. The terrorism isn't really mental illness. There's some confusion in the categories. They're doing it as some soldier kind of approach to give a message, political message. The mentally ill just killed their, you know, for example, in the Colorado movie theater shooting.
The Batman Dark Knight show.
Yes. And they interviewed him afterwards and they asked him what was his message. He said, "My message is that there is no message." That's a quote. But he did it just because he could. And then we have the hate and revenge. You know, they go after religious types. You know, we've had the shootings in churches. We've had shootings for racial reasons, for religious reasons. And those are five very different types of attackers for different reasons. And then often there is just you cannot figure out a motive. So the Mandalay Bay shooting, they're still trying, they closed the case. They still didn't know what the motive is. And what I have found is that typically when there is no known motive, you have to look very strongly at mental illness because it's coming from inside as opposed to outside.
Let me just remind people, you're listening to the voice of Dr. Gary Jackson. He has written a very important book, and it's good. That's why we have him on, and it's disturbing, but it's important. Name of the book is Surviving Mass Victim Attacks, What to Do When the Unthinkable Happens. Frank McKay here with Dr. Jackson. And Doctor, you've mentioned, and I've read different, excerpts, and you warn people about hiding when you hear the shots or you hear something. And one of the things you say is don't assume they're fireworks or firecrackers. Assume the worst and run, and just get as far away from the situation. Into a safe spot as possible, unless of course there's somebody under your care or there's children. You got to try to get them to safety, or the elderly or something along those lines. But you also said be careful about hiding, because so many people have been found in. I think even the guys in Columbine, those kids, they found people hiding in the bathroom and killed them, or found and different attackers have found people. The nightclub killer, for example. I mean, I'm sure people were hiding in all different places. So if you're going to hide someplace, make sure there's an out. Is basically what you were saying. I mean, can you expand on that a little?
Sure. It's a very good question, because I think it's one of the keys in the book. I go through four methods. We used to hear about run, hide, and fight, but that's not really specific enough. When something happens, you don't want to just run. So I use escape. Escape is always number one. Now, the reason I say escape, the definition of escape is leaving a place of danger to a safe place. So your goal, if an attack begins, is to find a safe place. Now, sometimes that's difficult to do. So second would be hiding. And hiding is really putting something between you and the attacker so you can't be seen or heard. Turn off the cell phone. You don't want it to go off if you're hiding. Hiding is really a means of escape. In other words, put something between you and the attacker so you can't be seen, but constantly be looking for a way out, whether it's breaking a window, a back door, etc. And it's very, very important to do that. Stay in place. Some people say drop to the floor. Well, that might not work if the shooter's coming towards you. He knows he hasn't shot there yet, and he's going to shoot you. So stay in place should rarely be used. You should be moving, hiding, escaping. Stay in place. The only real time that it's appropriate is if you're caught in a smaller scale bombing, not like the Oklahoma City bombing, but like the Boston Marathon bombing.
Right.
The reason for that, if you take off running, you could run toward a second bomb, which they did have. So in the Boston Marathon bombing, there were two bombs a block apart, 18 seconds apart in detonation. It's better to, everybody should know first aid. If you're injured, you might want to take care of yourself. The bomb's gone. First responders will be arriving, or you could be helping someone else as opposed to running into the vicinity of a second bomb. So it's very, very important. And last resort always is attack the attacker back. That shouldn't happen unless you just have no choice. There's no escape, no hiding, can't stay in place. He's on top of you. And what are you going to do? You have to fight back. And when you fight back, it's not fight. I hate to put it in these words, but you're going to be killed. So your goal is to stop that person. If you have to kill them, you kill them. It's going to hurt other people. It's going to hurt you. And so you do what you can. That means on the way to escaping, you get blocked. Grab anything you can. If you're in a restaurant, knives, forks, anything that can be used for a weapon. And as you mentioned, you have to be particularly concerned if you're responsible for other people. It could be elderly parents that are frail. It could be young children. It could be physically, even mentally challenged. And if you have that responsibility, you need to be careful. And one thing I point out is in the first seconds of an event, and you're correct, many times after many attacks, people are interviewed and they say, gee, I thought it was just firecrackers. because we're used to seeing guns being shot in movies and TV, and it sounds different in the real world. It depends on the acoustics and whatever, and it might not sound like what you think a gunshot sounds like. So when those events start, you have some seconds just to orient to what's going on. And one of the points I make, which is a very important point, is the more you think about this, even though we don't want to think about it, but if you think about, okay, I'm going to go to the mall, what would I do if someone started shooting in the mall? Well, what most people would do is run for the entrances they came in. They need to know that every store typically has a back door used for deliveries. Yeah. You run through the door right next to you, probably obstacles that you can hide behind on the way and exit out the back door, as restaurants have, as bars have. So you have to think differently, and it's important to look for those opportunities. It takes me 10 seconds when I walk into a location. I look around. I look, where are the windows? Where are the exits? And where am I going to sit? They set me in a corner I don't like. I'm a customer. I say, no, I'm sorry. I want to sit over there by the window.
Yeah.
We have choices. And I think I call it a personal protection plan in the book. When you give it thought, it reduces the amount of time it takes to react, because you're hearing it. You kind of know a little bit what to do. You've already checked out the exits, the windows, and you have a better chance of surviving if that's looked at beforehand, as opposed to you're sitting in the middle of a restaurant, someone starts shooting, it's like, now what? What is this? What's going on? You should already be on your way out.
Dr. Gary Jackson is your very special guest. He's the voice that you're hearing. He's my very special guest. Surviving mass victim attacks, what to do when the unthinkable happens. And Dr. Jackson is our very special guest, as I mentioned. I always liken cops to back to the wall. Like when they're in a diner, every cop I know or retired cop, they like to have their back to the wall. They like to see what's going on. So they'll take the back booth in a diner. I do the same thing, and I don't know why. It's just to see who's coming in, and I don't want people to be able to see me without me being able to see them. But do you recommend in let's say a diner or a situation like that to have you back to the wall?
Absolutely. I'm a former CIA intelligence officer. I was kind of trained to be aware at all times. Always be aware. It doesn't matter where you are. It's just a good thing to do. And I put in the book that very fact that it's better to orient, see the entrances, see the exits. And I often have moved simply because I'm seated in the wrong place facing a corner. I don't want to be facing a corner. I want to see what's going on around the room. It's actually more enjoyable to see what's going on around the room anyway. You know, so I often will change seats. And it's not being paranoid. It's just being cautious. So, you know, it's a very important point. And I make several points about being aware. You know, for example, because of technology, people are walking around with earbuds in their ear. You know, they're texting. And we now have vehicle rundowns. People have been run over on the street on purpose. We lose, you know, many people. In Nice, France, we lost, I think it was 86 people. Actually, it was more than that were run over. And some of them didn't even know it was coming. So just being aware, not texting. I mean, I was in a restaurant a couple of weeks ago, and it was almost amusing. There was a family of five sitting at the table having dinner, including the kids. Everyone had a cell phone. Everyone was texting. There was hardly any words spoken. Yeah. And, you know, and I've seen many times people texting while crossing an intersection. Oh, it's like, give me a break. You know, you have to be aware, not just for mass victim attacks. You have to be aware of your environment at all times. People get killed.
Just amazing. And, you know, I appreciate you writing this book, taking the time to analyze it like this. And Dr. Gary Jackson, I want to thank you very much. A former CIA intelligence officer. He's the author of Surviving Mass Victim Attacks, What to Do When the Unthinkable Happens. And in about 20 seconds, if you can give us a website or a social media site where people can go and buy your book and get in contact with you.
Yeah, I do have a website. It's massvictim.com. And the book is on Amazon as well as other places. And it gives kind of a description of the book. I think one of the sites gives some excerpts from it. I think I try to keep up with more recent attacks on the website because I didn't want to stop when the book was published. I'll say one other piece real quickly. you know, you said it yourself very well. Media attention wants the bad parts to be shown because it sells. I'm starting to log events that have been prevented. I'm up to 60.
Wow.
People don't hear about those.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, unfortunately, they don't hear about those. But listen, it just amazing. If I could get you back for a part two, I'd love to have it. And again, Dr. Gary Jackson, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Dr. Gary Jackson has been our very special guest. He is a former CIA intelligence officer. Surviving Mass Victim Attacks, What to Do When the Unthinkable Happens is the name of the book. Everyone buy it. Go to Amazon or anywhere they sell good books. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.